Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Welcome back to Sports with Neil and Friends here on Blog Talk Radio. It's just Neil Roberts coming to you live from our headquarters here. We're here discussing college football's back, and it's time to be excited, especially for us Cougar fans who finally get to see Wazoo beat an FCS program for the first time in 2 years. This was I'm pulling up the because I hate myself, I'm looking at my recaps from the Portland State and Eastern Washington games last year. The game that I'm going to start off here with is our favorite, arguably the best headline I've ever had, which is WSU rudely reminds fans there is no floor, loser to Portland State. And the... here's the quote I want you to hear. Mike Leach is in year four of his rebuild project. Yes, he got the Cougs to a bowl game in his second year, but defense and special teams continue to cause all sorts of problems for the football program. These two units were atrocious in 2014 and are off to an auspicious start in 2015 with this incredibly disappointing loss to Portland State. That team went on to win 9 games and is arguably the best Mike team we've had in Pullman under Mike Leach and the best team since the 2002 Pac-12 champions. And then last year again, here's a quote from my Eastern recap. Head coach Mike Leach is now 0-5 in opening games and 20-30 in his time at Washington State. The loss marks the second straight season that opened with a loss in FCS program following last season's debacle against PSU. It's over. That 5-game losing streak is over. Wazoo finally picked up a win on the first weekend of the season for the first time since 2011 when Jeff Toole broke his collarbone in a rout of an overmatched Idaho State team. It feels great to be 1-0 at the start of the year. I can't imagine what it's like for the coaching staff that's had to deal with this nonsense. This nonsense that obviously is their fault, losing to Portland State, which was awful in 2014, but ended up going to the playoffs in 2015, losing to Eastern, which has been a consistent top 15 FCS program since Paul Wolf left for Wazoo in 2007. So, but they got a not-so-good Montana State team with second-year man Jeff Choate. Jeff Choate being the former linebackers coach that the Cougars had in 2012 when Leach took over, before he bounced and then worked his way to Montana State. The offense did what the offense has done pretty much throughout the last 3 years with Luke Falk at the helm, and that's against teams that have been overmatched talent-wise, he hasn't taken deep shots downfield. He hasn't forced the ball downfield. He's given what the defense has left him, which has been the underneath route. Unlike against Portland State, however, you have a running back, which is considered the F receiver in the air raid, and James Williams, who could take advantage of the space. Keith Harrington was the star of the Portland State game by far 2 years ago. He's the fourth string running back this year. That offensive line that has two All-Americans on it and three conference selection, all preseason conference selections, they cut their teeth 2 years ago. They're ready to rock and roll now. And boy, was it nice to see this offense start slow and the team not lose. 14 points in the first half, despite the fact that Luke Falk was 20 for 20. There wasn't a ton of running room, surprisingly, inside in between the tackles. And the air raid doesn't bounce outside very often when it comes to running. So that's why, you know, seeing them stretch the field horizontally, and this is what the air raid is really, really good at, is stretching that field horizontally underneath with the F position, with James Williams, with Gerard Wicks, with Jamal Morrow. This is the running back core in the offensive line that Mike Leach needs to make the air raid go. Unfortunately, Andre Dillard was left in the game too late and got hurt. Hopefully his injury isn't serious. I'll be able to see him back pretty quickly because he's crucial to that O-line. I mean, there's a lot of depth at the offensive line because that's one of the positions Leach is really good at recruiting consistently. But losing Dillard hurts. He was the third number three tackle, graded tackle, according to Pro Football Focus. Number one being Cole Madison. So losing Dillard is going to hurt, especially going into a game against Boise State next week, but that's for a different time. You kind of got to see Mike Leach making the decision to cut the teeth of a couple rookie wide receivers early on, Calvin Johnson and 1 second here. Rookie, freshman wide receivers. I just had their names written down. I apologize. So they decided to cut their teeth against Montana State. They weren't able to find space. And that's fine. Montana State was dropping eight to try and force Wazoo to keep the ball and pick up 8 yards, keep the ball in and where it was more manageable for the Montana State's athletes to close in and make the tackle on the play. Whereas instead of letting the ball get stretched downfield and them getting torched. But James Williams is not Keith Harrington. James Williams, Mooby, as he shall be known from here on out in all of our podcasts, is by far the most athletic player on that roster. He has speed, he has agility, and he can spin out of anything. And that's why we love him. So you saw Luke use him as his security blanket, kind of like you saw River Craycraft last year, hitting those quick little checkdowns of 8-9 yard gains. And that's just because there was a space for Williams to do what he needed to do. Jamal Morrow did not have nearly as much success on those underneath routes against the Bobcats as Bowie. And Gerard Wicks is not – he can catch, but he's not a receiver. He's not someone you want to be – he's not someone you want to be targeting a lot. So the Cougs are it was nice to see Williams do that. 13 catches and 163 yards. It's a pretty damn good game for a running back. Oh, and 9 carries and 45 yards each. 45 yards. It was a really good game for the Cougar off for the offense. Again, because they, you saw Luke check it down and you got to see kind of what Booby is good at. And I'm going to keep hammering on that because Booby was fantastic. And he's the only thing that kept me from going absolutely insane because that game felt like the Portland State game where the offense just couldn't move downfield or stretch the field. Again, I should have known better because they have better athletes. The offensive line isn't new like it was back 2 years ago. And so it was just a relief when they scored 2 more touchdowns, and especially when Jamal Morrow ran it in. And it just felt there was a big sigh of relief for the Cougars going forward. Falk's going to have to get comfortable with his wide receiver club. He needs to, because this offense is not going to be able to thrive without deep stretches and throwing it downfield. Tre'Veris Martin Jr. is going to have to step up again against the Broncos like he did last year. Isaiah Johnson-Mack, he's going to have to become, he's going to have to stretch, prove himself as well. Kyle Sweet, he's a good player. He's a solid wide receiver. He's not River Craycraft, but he's going to be asked to fill that River Craycraft role of the guy who goes out and gets those 8, 9, 10-yard routes to pick up those first downs. But there's question marks there. Robert Lewis hasn't shown himself to be super special. And again, they've got a lot of freshmen they're bringing in this year. It's Demiri Calvin who they're running out. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the wide receiver corps. Stretching the field is going to be incredibly important against the Broncos coming up. And they're going to have to run better, too. They didn't run very well in the first half. Once the Montana State's defense started to wear down and get exhausted after being on the field for so long because their offense was absolutely ineffective, they were doing great. But, 31-0, you can't complain too much. First opening day win since I was a freshman in college. Rock on. The next game I want to talk about is the UCLA Bruins and the insane 34-point comeback that they had, which is the second largest in FBS history. When I sat down to start writing my Pac-12 power rankings last night, which you can find at sportsoneal.com, UCLA was down 44-10 going into halftime. They were gifts of the Texas A&M players with the marching band staff strutting around on the sideline, goofing around. They were up huge in the Rose Bowl, which was empty. UCLA fans are the best, obviously. But credit due to Jim Mora. Sorry. He made some incredible second half adjustments on offense. And the Bruins were able to roll downfield, drive after drive after drive, just get themselves back into that ballgame. Shame, and an absolute shame on Kevin Sumlin. With a 34-point lead and an entire half of football ahead, and UCLA not able to stop them defensively at all, through the air or on the ground in the first half. And a 34-point lead and 30 minutes of clock to burn off. Sumlin runs 7 run plays. Runs the rock 7 times. The fudge? Seriously? Why? How? How stupid can you be? I know you're a pass-first offense, and you want to keep building on the lead. But at the same time, when you have the athletes that Texas A&M does, you need to be able to run the ball too and assert your dominance that way. They stopped running the ball. And UCLA's defense was able to shut down the pass with the adjustment. And Sumlin did not adjust mid-third quarter or in the fourth quarter. While Josh Rosen led touchdown drive after touchdown drive after touchdown drive to overcome a 34-point deficit, the largest deficit come-from-behind win, the second largest come-from-behind win in football bowl subdivision history. Before the BCS era, the FBS was known as Division 1A. And Josh Rosen and the Bruins capped this off with the mother of all fake spikes. This is our little preview here of our post that's going up tomorrow, but the clock was stopped because the Bruins had picked up a first down. The judge had not signaled for the clock to start again, and the Aggies fell for it, even though the clock was stopped, because after every first down in college football, the clock stops. The Aggies should have known this. The coaching staff should have been saying, pay attention. But the Aggies fell for the fake spike. Rosen hit to the wideout, running down the seam, running down the sideline for the go-ahead touchdown. Rosen actually later said he's trying to throw the ball out of bounds. The receiver just went up and got it. Which, by the way, is a kind of flexibility that Russell Wilson could have used in February 2015, but that's a different story entirely. Rosen says he's trying to throw the ball out of bounds, and his receiver goes up and gets it. That's creative offensive play calling at the end of the game. And as much as I despise Jim Mora and don't like his coaching style or his "we're tougher than you" mentality by having his team warm up on the other team's half of the field, his dirtbag mentality, he did a really good job on Saturday coaching UCLA back from what seemed like an almost impossible margin of defeat. And he deserves all of the credit for that. Absolutely all of it. As for the rest of the Pac-12, Cal pulled off an incredible victory, come-from-behind victory, to upset North Carolina in North Carolina in Chapel Hill. The Huskies were outplayed by Rutgers for honestly two and a half quarters, but Rutgers, not as talented, not as deep, wore down quickly in the third quarter, and Washington just ran away with it. The offensive line looks like it's going to be a pretty big problem for Washington going forward. They don't have any real test until later in their schedule, in their conference schedule, so we'll see what happens. But you have to be concerned if you're a Huskies fan about some of the hits Browning took on Saturday. They're going to get tested pretty early, too, once they hit Pac-12 play. Looking at their schedule here, you know, they get three cupcakes. They got two more cupcakes left in Montana and Fresno State, and then they're in Colorado. They're up at Folsom Field. They're at altitude, over a mile high, against an aggressive defensive line. Takes a couple, any hits from Colorado, which has way better athletes than Rutgers does, Washington could be in some serious trouble. So it'll be interesting to see how Chris Peterson and company manage the offensive line and the play calling against Montana and Fresno, see if they can get some depth in there and some experience and try some different formations. The Pac-12 did really good. Washington won, Wazoo won, Cal won. The only loss the Pac-12 suffered in week zero or week one was Oregon State against Colorado State. They went 12-1 in these last 2 weeks. No other conference has that kind of winning record. So that's really great news. That's great news for the depth of the conference. That's great news for the skill of the conference. It'll be interesting to watch a conference absolutely demolish itself like it does every year. But we'll be happy to see what's going on here in the future with these teams and these new coaches. So, real quick, I want to hit on Willie Taggart's debut. I already talked about Justin Wilcox a little bit at Cal with their upset win in North Carolina. But Willie Taggart brought back the Oregon offense. 77 points against Southern Utah. Granted, Southern Utah is almost as bad as Montana State, and they're both in the Big Sky. But rolling up 77 points in your first game with a fairly new offensive scheme that's similar but not exactly the same as to what they've been running before, having a Royce Freeman in your back pocket obviously helps. That's really great news for the Ducks, having Royce Freeman back for a senior year. That was him not going to the NFL. It's going to help Taggart out. The defense looked a little suspect. Southern Utah's quarterback doesn't have the arm to take advantage of the holes that the Ducks are leaving there, but make no mistake, there were holes. They were massive in the secondary, so Sam Darnold's going to rip them apart. Keller Kreis is going to rip them apart. Falk, Jake Browning, The only team that's not going to rip them apart on there once they hit conference play is going to be Oregon State. And that's if Jake Luton doesn't pull himself together. Speaking of the Beavers, they got stomped by Colorado State, and they almost became the second Pac-12 team in 3 years to lose to the Vikings, which would have been hilarious and sad at the same time. Gary Anderson's in a lot of trouble there. They still don't have a ton of depth, and that's part of the problem they're experiencing, especially on the defense. But the big game that's going to be talked about for a while, especially since it's completely altered Florida State season, is that Florida State-Alabama game. Alabama pulled away late, but there's a chance Florida State could be out without its starting quarterback. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. I apologize. But they could be without him for the rest of the year, depending on what kind of ligament damage he suffered in that hit. They also lost a couple of their defensive linemen. One of them we know is out for the season already. I can't remember his name right now. And they were just beat up by a far superior Crimson Tide team. And that doesn't bode well for Clemson having a real challenger in the ACC, because the ACC is fairly weak this year. Yes, Maryland went down and picked up a pretty big win against Texas, but Texas was overrated from about 6 miles away. You could see that game, that loss coming. They have too many deficiencies talent-wise on their roster for them to be competitive at all. And that's going to be a problem for Tom Herman going into Big 12 play against Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and TCU, all of which have competent quarterbacks with live arms. Texas being rated as high as they were was a really dumb decision by the coaches and the media. They don't have the talent. It's been going to Baylor. It's been going to TCU. It's been going to Houston. It's been going to Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. It's been coming up to Pullman. It's been going to Colorado. It's been going to Salt Lake City. Texas's collapse under Mac, I can't remember his last name, was the most detrimental thing to Texas football. So now they've got to try and rebuild the talent base when they're not dominant. When Oklahoma is still good, Oklahoma State's still good, Oklahoma State's really good, and then on top of those two out-of-state competitors, TCU and Baylor, although Baylor lost to Liberty, which is absolutely hilarious for more than just football reasons. I'm not going to get onto that here, but if you want to talk to me about it, DM me. Slide into my DMs. When Baylor and TCU popped up and are now not winning, and they're both winning in the Big 12, that's a major problem. And that's legitimate competition that Texas has never had in state. And on top of that, outside of the Big 12, Houston, thanks to Tom Herman himself, is now siphoning away talent. It's going to take him time to rebuild Texas. He's going to have to recruit. He's going to have to recruit better than Charlie Strong did to Texas Tech. Charlie Strong is a solid coach. He just couldn't recruit at the level Texas needed to. And that was his ultimate undoing. You should have seen improvement in the talent from year one to year three under Strong, and he didn't. Speaking of Charlie Strong, University of Southern Florida almost started off slow against San Jose State. Charlie Strong is the new head coach there after Willie Taggart took off to Oregon. But they rolled right through the Spartans in the third and fourth quarter to put them out of their misery. Charlie Strong, probably a better fit for the American Conference than he is for the hype in Texas, especially since he's coming into a program that doesn't have to rebuild. The University of Southern Florida can compete for Florida recruits because the University of Southern Florida, thanks to Taggart, has won the last few years, and they've now got a reputation as a winner. And they've got a head coach who won a boatload of ball games at Louisville. And he did that on top of the work that Rick Pitino did. Trong has never built a program. He's taken over and he's maintained and he's improved on those results. But he was never built a program, and I think that's not a strong suit that we saw at Tech, especially under that intense media glare. But good. Going back to Texas losing to Maryland, I don't know how many of you saw that game, but the Terps lost their starting quarterback, and then Kasim Hill came in. And Kasim Hill doesn't have nearly as accurate an arm, but you can learn accuracy as their guy, Paul Gimme. I'm going to try and say that, and I totally pronounced it wrong. I apologize. Kasim Hill doesn't have as live an arm, but the dude or doesn't have as accurate an arm right now because he's new to the offense. He's a true freshman. But the dude can run. He added a totally different dynamic to the Terps offense that you didn't see with the starter. Once he fully understands the passing patterns and the routes that his guys are running, and he gets a hold of the read, watch out the way the read progression works. Watch out for Kasim Hill at Maryland. That's a name that's going to sneak up on you. I was impressed by what I saw in the quarter he played for Maryland. He didn't outplay Paul Gimme. He added a new dynamic, and that was too much for the Texas defense, which, as I said just a minute ago, doesn't have the athletes to be able to handle Big 12 offenses, let alone high-flying offenses that you're seeing in the ACC right now that Maryland is built to keep up with. So it was Kasim Hill is going to be a name to watch out for in 2 to 3 years. He's going to be really good. I liked what I saw. He's got wheels. He knew when to get out of the pocket. His big problem is he just doesn't know the reads and the timing yet. So, but week one of college football was absolutely great. I'm so glad it's back. We're excited to bring you coverage, our coverage of Sports and Neil with our Pac-12 Power Rankings. Because we're Wazoo alums, we're going to cover the Cougs pretty heavily. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Josh Rosen at UCLA this year. They had a really, really rough season before Rosen went down because they're breaking in their new offense. In their second year there, they look like they've got a better hold of it. And as the season goes along and you get a better, and Rosen gets a better feel for the wideouts and the offensive line he's got in front of him, because they're, if I remember correctly, the Bruins are breaking in a couple of new guys in the middle. I think it's the two guards. UCLA's offense could become something pretty dangerous down the road. Still not sold on their defense, and that's mostly because their corners, especially early on in the game against Texas AMU, looked pretty soft, and they weren't able to cover the Aggies' wideouts as well as they needed to. The Bruins adapted for that by bringing more and getting and pressing and getting them out, the Aggies out of their timing of the offense. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when they have to go up against USC and Stanford, which are less pass-based timing offenses and more run-based timing offenses. For the Bruins defense. Thank you so much for listening into us today. We will see you next Monday at 8 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. You've been listening to Sports with Neil and Friends. This is Neil Roberts signing off. Have a great night.